He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
James, the lateral.
Chris Davis takes it at the back of the end zone. He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to another episode of Walk On Red Shirts podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-hosts, Jake and intern Gibble. On this week's episode, intern Gibble is going to dish out some news that's happened over the last 2 weeks since our last episode. And we'll kind of get into, I think there's some transfer news in there as well. And then a little bit later on, we're going to continue our series drafting, all-time collegiate team. This time we're going to do offensive linemen, which is going to get super interesting, because this is definitely the hardest one we're going to have to do, along the way. We are still in the middle of this coronavirus thing. We are still kind of trying to figure out whether college football is going to happen this fall. Starts to feel like it's going to, from things that I've been reading recently, but still, who knows? How are you guys doing?
I'm starting to feel more confident each week that we're going to have college football in some fashion or form.
What about you, intern?
Well, soccer's back, so that's been fantastic.
Yeah, this is a football podcast, so you can talk about right now.
American football, because I know if you just call it football, intern's going to get all high and mighty on his throne.
Stop no, taking I'm your Viagra and come back down to earth.
Listen, having some sports back is getting better. There's golf on today. There's just, little by little, we're getting there in the sports world, and it just needs to keep ramping up until we get college football in the fall.
If people donate $500, those Gibble and I will join the octagon.
I'll do what?
You and I will jump in the octagon and go at it.
No, thanks.
I might donate some money towards that fund because I would enjoy watching that very much.
All money goes back to this podcast. See, that's why you can't say no, intern.
Oh, this isn't great.
That's true. You got to raise money for the podcast that doesn't pay you.
Will I get a cut of that? I can already tell you the answer is no.
No, because you're the intern.
Right.
If you wouldn't have screwed up, if you wouldn't have screwed up immediately after getting promoted, then we would be having a different discussion here. But yeah, I mean, now to double back here, we're recording here on, you know, Sunday the 17th. And yeah, you know, soccer's back. NASCAR's back on today, which I'm very excited about. And they're running much different schedule. So it'll be like three races in a single week, span. So at least I have something. And then, you know, on the weekends, I'm still doubling back and watching some old school college football games, here and there. Watch the 2014 ACC championship game between Georgia Tech and Florida State, just last night. You know, I'm very glad Paul Johnson's triple option's out of the ACC, but watching it back, it's super fun. Justin Thomas was a thrill ride for that Yellow Jackets squad. But yeah, so just trying to get through it. I know I read some stuff this week. Manny Diaz and Miami AD Blake James both said that they feel pretty confident that we're going to have college football. Blake James said that still speculation on whether they're going to have fans, but he does feel like regardless, they will end up having college football, which is good for those of us that want to watch at home. College football is the one sport, though, that I don't know how I'm going to feel about watching it without fans, because that atmosphere kind of is what makes college football so great, as opposed to pretty much any other sport out there. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on as we continue to move forward. And Manny Diaz said he believes that teams are going to need about 6 weeks in order to prepare for the season. He thinks so. We'll see. see as that goes along with some more coaches and stuff weighing in on this, and as we get a little bit farther down the line. Anyway, Andrew and Gibble, I'll send it over to you for some news.
All right. Well, we'll start with the SEC here. The officials are going to be voting on this coming Friday, the 22nd, whether or not they're going to open their athletic facilities in June. The projected dates are either June 1st or the 15th, potentially, for those to reopen, which would be yet another step in the right direction to getting college football back. Let's see.
Well, real quick on that one, I believe Philip Fulmer is the only one that says that has plans to vote against June 1st. Everybody else is going to vote for June 1st, for last I saw. So the SEC will almost certainly be back the 1st of June.
Nice. Well, that's a good sign for sure. In the most Captain Obvious news possible, the NCAA said that schools need to be in session to have fall sports. I don't know who thinks that they don't have to be in session, but I can't imagine a world where the student athletes are on campus, but yet the rest of the students aren't. So
that's not what they mean.
Yeah.
They mean school literally has to be running.
Right.
They can have, they didn't specify if they meant online or in person.
Oh, well, that's good.
They just said school needs to be running. They didn't specify. You just can't cancel school for the fall and still have athletics is what they meant.
Well, still, I mean, you can't really cancel school in the fall and have sports. That still is pretty obvious as well. All right. Switching over to recruiting a little bit here. Division I in-person recruiting dead period has been extended through June 30th. They are still allowing the phone calls during this time. It doesn't mean that recruiting is completely stopped, because we're seeing Ohio State and Tennessee still flying through the recruits.
Tennessee has like 85 recruits in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. So, but it, again, this is another thing that makes sense. If some states are open and others are not, that gives an unfair advantage in different areas. So assuming when all states are relatively open, then you'll probably start to see the in-person recruiting start to happen again for that.
I imagine that what they'll look like, you're only allowed so many unofficial or official visits on a weekend. You're not going to be allowed to bring, 50 kids in on a given day. You might be allowed 10 or 15 kids, but you're not going to be allowed to bring, 50 to 100 kids in on a weekend.
Yeah, everything's still going to be a lot more limited than it normally would be. But again, the steps in the right direction are promising for sure. In the MAC conference, they've announced what they're going to do to implement their cost-saving measures. Some of the schools are unfortunately having to cut some athletic programs. But in general, they just as an across-the-board thing, primarily for football here, they're ending the home team staying in hotels the night before a game. Obviously, that helps with costs. And they're reducing the travel rosters for each team from 76 to 70 players. They're ending postseason tournaments for at least the next 5 years for men and women's soccer, baseball, softball, men and women's tennis, women's lacrosse, and women's field hockey. So for those sports, the championships are now going to be determined by their regular seasons instead of those normal postseason tournaments. So that's another interesting one. Do you see other conferences doing this? Or I feel like they kind of have to, especially like the group of five type conferences.
Folsom, I'll let you take that one first.
Yeah, I mean, the smaller conferences, I certainly do think that these are measures that they're going to end up having to take, especially if you end up not getting that gate revenue from football and stuff like that, which does make up a decent chunk of what these athletic departments end up putting towards other sports. So I could certainly see it. I'm always down for a tournament, but it never really makes sense to me to crown a champion by basically saying that the regular season doesn't matter. So that's, well, a bummer for the kids and the collegiate athletes there. At the end of the day, I think that makes sense on two fronts. But yeah, I mean, this is something I certainly could see many other conferences taking, especially with cost saving measures. Like, I get it. You don't want kids staying on campus the night before a game with the risk of, you know, parties and all that stuff, which could implement a bit of an advantage for the road teams, depending on how that goes. But I certainly understand that as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to start seeing some smaller conferences start to lean that way a bit more when it comes to cost saving.
Yeah, I agree. I could see the Sun Belt and Conference USA, because they're a similar level of the MAC, doing something similar. The Mountain West still does fairly well, and the American obviously is a tier above the MAC, so I think they're in better financial stakes. But I think it just kind of shows that the MAC does not bring in that much money if they didn't play for 3 months, and they're already cutting things back for the fall and for next season, because it's pretty much a standard for your team to stay in a hotel the night before, because like what you said, parties, if you're in a dorm, people coming back on a Friday night at 2-3 in the morning, you know, potential issues at that point. I guess you could say you don't really have a watch over them. So I think this just kind of points out that the MAC was not making that much money. Those Tuesday night, Wednesday night MAC games aren't bringing in the revenue you think. And on top of that, not many people are going to those Tuesday, Wednesday night MAC games because it's freezing. It's most likely in Ohio or Michigan, and it's a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock that people are still going to work the next day.
Yeah. Well, those games are fantastically fun to watch on TV.
Oh, they're fun to watch, but Tuesday they definitely night, don't get the ratings.
Exactly. They don't bring in the money that they would obviously hope to be bringing in. Even with the TV contracts and everything, that you're seeing that they're just not as profitable, which is unfortunate, but I mean, we're all in a weird time, so things like that are going to happen. All right, so switching gears here to the state of California. The state schools in California are going to be doing online classes in the fall, which means there's no in-person classes for schools like San Jose State, San Diego State, Fresno State. We could be seeing that expand through the rest of California to Cal and USC. If the schools in California end up not playing, like some of the bigger ones, there have been discussions already for Alabama and TCU to potentially play. Both of those teams have California opponents in the same week. TCU plays Cal, Bama plays USC. So if those games aren't happening, you could potentially see an Alabama-TCU matchup during that week. I'm not sure which week of the season that is, but I would imagine it's early on. I know, Jake, you had said on Twitter a few times, if the California schools aren't playing, then the Pac-12 loses a few schools, the Mountain West loses a few schools. And you talked about that kind of a mega conference for the West Coast for this coming season. Yeah, I like that idea.
I don't know what would need to be done behind the scenes, contract wise, for TVs, redoing schedules, all sorts of things like that. But if you eliminate the California schools, the Mountain West has 9, the Pac-12 has 8. So if you lose any more schools out of there, say either the state of Washington or Oregon or Nevada, anywhere out in the West doesn't play, you're potentially looking at 6 or 7 schools in each conference. It's going to be really tough to play a conference schedule like that unless you're going to play everybody twice almost. So I think it'd be interesting to have, for one season only, having the Mountain West and the Pac-12 essentially combine, where it's just, you know, the Pac-12 is one division, the Mountain West is one division, and then you do a couple crossover games and have a championship.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea a lot. That'd be really fun. Something different. I mean, I know some of those schools end up playing each other as their out-of-conference games anyways, but
yeah, but like Wake and North Carolina played a non-conference game last year.
Well, yeah, that was just weird.
And they're doing it again in like 2 years.
Still doesn't make sense.
Yeah, my take on it, everything's so fluid, and that's why I've kind of kept quiet on Twitter about it, because I feel like there's 1,000 moving parts every single day going on with it. I mean, at the end of the day, well, I really wouldn't mind just seeing teams just play in their conference, you know, 12 games. If the Pac-12 has to limit their season or whatever, and shift to more that direction. And then you could throw in, you know, obviously Notre Dame. Everybody knows my stance on it, but obviously they'd have to be in the ACC. And then those other independent schools, you could kind of just throw them into a conference semi-affiliation for a year with whatever they're close to.
We want UMass.
Like, you, yeah, I mean, UMass could go to the American Conference for a season or whatever to count that. BYU could be in the Mountain West Conference, whatever, and keep things a bit more tight-knit in that sense. If it had to come down to that, and then form some sort of tournament or something at the end to kind of crown a national champion, or if you just wanted to do the four team, whatever you want to do. The closer we get, depending on what it ends up looking like, who knows? I'm just kind of spitballing here on what I think an idea could be.
Yeah. So
also, because obviously, like, with out of conference games, it's going to throw a wrench into it, especially if you schedule other opponents that might not be available or might not be reticent to flying cross country or something like that, you know. So
yeah,
one potential issue, I guess not issue, but outcome of that is if it's only conference games, conferences like the Sun Belt, Conference USA, and MAC are actually going to even lose more money because they'll lose all their bye games. So when they use that to help fund their athletic department, they're losing that $1 million for when Bowling Green plays Ohio State, or, you know, Alabama plays the team in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, those are, I kind of, in my opinion, what keep the lower conferences afloat at times. Those games are, while they're blowouts, they're massively helpful just because of the money that those smaller schools are getting from the spotlight on the national scale and from the, obviously, the other team in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sense I'm not opposed to, but it also comes down to how close the team is to where they're playing and how resonant they feel that trip is. Obviously, Bowling Green to Ohio State's not much of a trip. You're staying in state regardless, so it's not really something like that. But, you know, USC flying to Alabama or wherever that game is or something like that.
If your bye game is New Mexico State going to Penn State or something.
Yeah. If it is more cross country or a large degree of where you end up having to go. So
when Penn State could play Buffalo as their bye game or something, or a team of that nature, they could play Akron, even though it's a different state, still not that far away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe just adjacent states. I feel like that would be beneficial. All right, we'll switch gears here a little bit. Sticking with California, though, UCLA is set to hire Boston College's Martin Jarmond as their athletic director. Jarmond served as Boston College's AD since 2017 and is going to replace longtime Bruins AD Dan Guerrero, who's going to be retiring in July.
Did you almost mispronounce Guerrero?
Yeah, the letters got all, there was too many vowels in it. It threw me off for a second. Going back to Zach Evans' commitment, we talked about him a little while ago. He finally decided to commit to TCU. So this is going to be TCU's first 5-star recruit in ever. So that's pretty cool for them. I think he was the top running back in Texas for the 2020 class. His recruitment was just all over the place. He was the one that committed to Georgia and then decommitted and was just kind of all over the place. So nobody
signed a letter of intent and got released from it.
Yeah. So good to see him finally land there. We'll see how his actual college career plays out, but could be a really, really big signing for TCU as long as he ends up playing well.
I'm going to bite my tongue.
Anyway, switching over to the transfer portal, we have a lot of kids that are transferring now that their school years are over. Probably the biggest one out of in the news this past week was Taulia Tagovailoa. I probably butchered his first name.
You did.
Yeah. It's Hawaiian names. I can get the last name now because I've heard Tagovailoa a million times. Anyway, he's transferring.
How'd you say it?
Tagovailoa.
You still.
Tagovailoa.
Yeah, you still didn't say it right.
Tagovailoa. Okay, everybody says it a different way.
Well, I'm telling you the proper way. So put some respect on the name.
Well,
I'm pretty sure it's Taulia.
Okay. Anyway, he's going from
Alabama to his brother.
Yep. That's an easy way to say it. He's going from Alabama to Maryland. We're not sure if he's going to be actually playing this season. He is going to have to get a waiver in order to play, but that helps with the depth for Maryland after Tyrell Pigram is transferred.
Tyrell?
Out. Tyrell? Oh, my goodness. I can't pronounce names. Anyway, he's going from Maryland to Western Kentucky. His is going to be a grad transfer.
So Big Red.
He's going to be immediately eligible to play for Western Kentucky this coming season.
Tua's brother's going to get a waiver because his last name, right? Like, we all know that.
Yes. Yeah.
100%.
Like his last name is just going to give him the waiver. They're just going to see his name and be like, oh, approved. He'll be approved in 3 weeks.
As of now, he doesn't have the waiver. When they see his name come through, he will
just stamp him approval.
Yep. Pretty much. It's almost a given. All right. Down in Florida, offensive lineman Isaiah Walker is transferring from Florida to Miami. His reasoning was to be a bit closer to home, and he was an early enrollee at Florida in January. So I believe that means he's still eligible to play this coming season. Aaron, I assume this one makes you happy.
I don't think there's been an official word yet. I know there's still a lot of confusion amongst the Miami fan base. I would love it if he was eligible to play because Miami needs some help on the offensive line. Isaiah Walker was a guy that Miami went after pretty hard in the last recruiting cycle, and I think his pick pretty much came down to Miami and Florida. So it's nice to see him reverse course and end up coming back down. Certainly need the help on the offensive line. Hopefully he'll be eligible to play this upcoming fall. It's a big time get, 4-star recruit in this class. I think they said if you would have counted his towards Miami's recruiting class this past cycle, they would have finished in the top 10. So kind of counting it that way, and it's a late, but another great addition to this past cycle.
All right, we got two more transfers here. Florida, in replacement of Isaiah Walker, added 3-year starting offensive lineman from Mississippi State, Stuart Reese. He is a grad transfer and will be immediately eligible to play for Florida. So that kind of plugs up that hole that they had there. And in Illinois, they added former Louisville defensive back Trayshawn Smith as a grad transfer as well. He still has 2 years of eligibility because he had to sit out last season due to a suspension. In his first 2 seasons with the Cardinals, he had a total of 70 tackles and 2 picks. So that should be a good add for Illinois.
Illinois is like the poor man Miami of like, they'll take all the transfers, but just not as good of them.
Right. They've had a million of them, it feels like, this off season.
They've taken in the last 2 off seasons, they've taken a ton of transfers, but they're just like average players, but like really good by Illinois standards.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is all we have for news.
All right. Jake, I believe you got some stuff to promote for us.
Yeah. First, we'll talk about the half hour huddle. If you haven't caught any of those, make sure to go check them out. This past week we had Marty Gilliard and AJ Jenkins. Is that right, Gibble?
I'm pretty sure. Yes.
And then we have Ruben Randall coming out this week, and then potentially two more still in the next week or so. So look out for those. If you've missed any of them, there's been some really good ones. Marty Gilliard was very, very, very candid in all of his interviews. Not safe for work. Swears a lot, but still really good. So make sure to go catch that out. And also check out Smack Apparel, because Smack is the leading unlicensed and college and pro sports apparel company. Intern Gibble might be getting a shirt when we decide what his second team's going to be. I still got to make the bracket for round two. Don't worry, Aaron, Wyoming won, but Miami lost. For over 20 years, Smack has designed some of the most iconic and memorable rivalry gear in the world. From the anti-hurricane sex to be you to the Nationals priceless design, you're guaranteed to get a compliment at your next tailgate. Unlike licensed sports apparel, Smack doesn't need approval from teams or organizations. They create the designs that illustrate how diehard fans are feeling. So if you're tired of wearing a basic logo or generic jersey, your favorite team, check out Smack Apparel. Use promo code WALKON, one word, for 20% off your order. Don't worry, Kansas also won too.
I was worried.
There's some interesting schools on there for sure.
I don't want to say who I'm rooting for just because I don't want them to immediately get eliminated.
So far, so we're down to the Elite Eight.
You're not rooting for Wyoming.
Gibble, your Elite Eight is going to be Cincinnati versus Northwestern, Wyoming versus LSU, Tennessee versus Bowling Green, and Kansas versus Arizona State.
Interesting. There's some names on there that I could root for.
There's some teams on there I'm definitely rooting against.
If you become a Tennessee fan, you have to become insane. I'm pretty sure that's just part of the bylaws.
I'm insane?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Tennessee fans are insane. It's like part of the bylaws.
Oh, wonderful. Probably should just stock up on moonshine a while.
I mean, you should anyways, actually.
I've got a couple bottles if you want them.
Only if it's the real stuff.
It is the real stuff.
Perfect.
Not the stuff you buy in the supermarket or whatever. Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into it. Our offensive lineman draft. Like every other week, we did a randomization beforehand. I'm going first. Gibble will go second, and then Jake will pick third. We're going to pick five offensive linemen. So this one's going to be fun because there's no statistics. We only really have accolades and hoping that we are at your guys' mercy on who wins this one. So let's kick things off. Number one off the top, I'm really glad I got the first pick so I can get this out of the way. Orlando Pace, offensive tackle.
Wow, shocking. Shocking. Never would have thought this one was going to come.
Two-time All-American, 1996 Outland Trophy winner, 95 and 96 Lombardi Trophy winner, 1996 Heisman finalist, finished fourth, and he is a college football and pro football Hall of Famer. At the end of the day, this was the obvious number one, probably going off the board there, no matter who ended up taking the first slot in the draft. So I'll take Orlando Pace.
Also made the pancake block famous.
Sure.
Love me some pancakes. Well, I'm going to stick with the
I'm more of a waffle guy myself.
Ooh, it's a good debate. I'm going to take John Hicks here with
my... What the hell is wrong with this? Why can I not get anybody I want?
Because Ohio State players are great. John Hicks was a three-year starter, two-time All-American at tackle for Ohio State. He won three Big Ten championships with them. Won the Outland Award for Best Interior Lineman, a Lombardi Award, unanimous All-American, and finished second in the Heisman Trophy voting in 1973. So, yeah, John Hicks.
Okay, well, now I have to kind of redo what I was going to do. I didn't plan on losing both of them before my pick. All right, well, my first one, I'm going to start with Dave Remington. He was an All-American for 2 years, won the Outland Trophy in 81 and 82, Lombardi Trophy in 82 as well. Literally has an award named after him. So great in Nebraska in the early 2000s. Ended up being a first-round draft pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. Would have played more, but he actually tore his ACLs coming out of high school. So to finish with all those awards, and helped his team come within a few plays of two different national titles. Didn't quite win, but still an absolute stud on the Nebraska offensive line. And second one, I'm going to go Joe Thomas from Wisconsin. Two-time All-American, 06 consensus All-American, Outland Award winner, first-team All-Big Ten twice, 2007 Big Ten Medal of Honor, academic All-American all the time, three-year starter, number three overall, and a casual 10-time NFL Pro Bowl selection. And played consecutive over 10,000 snaps in the NFL, so it just shows that he continued his absolute greatness in the NFL as well as he was at Wisconsin.
All right. I think second pick here, I'm going to go with Will Shields, guard from Nebraska.
Stop taking people on my board.
Oh, this is going very well. All right. Well, he ended up as the Outland Trophy winner in 92. Let's see. What else did you do here?
You got anything else?
Nope, that was the first stat that popped out. Helped lead the way as Nebraska had 617 rushing yards in one game. Three-time All-Conference, appeared in four bowl games, and helped the Cornhuskers get to 37-10-1 in his time at Nebraska.
All right, my next two selections here, I got number one on my board, and somehow number two is still sitting here. I'm going to take Jonathan Ogden, offensive tackle, UCLA.
Am I even going to get it? I'm going to run out of people.
1995 Outland and Morris trophies, also a 1995 All-American, college football and pro football Hall of Famer as well. Jonathan Ogden is my second pick. Pick number three, I'm going to go guard here. I'm going to take John Hanna from Alabama, two-time All-American and both college football and pro football Hall of Famer. Played famously under Bear Bryant, who was actually also my coach on this team. So it works out very well. One of the best guards of all time throughout the history of football, both professionally and collegially. So I'll take John Hanna here for my third selection.
Ooh, all right, let's see who I want.
Well, it's not your turn, Gibble.
What?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, my bad.
You just picked.
I got confused.
It's a snake
Jake's
trap.
Jake's just like, man, I'm running out of people. I got to steal a slot here. I got to trade up. I got to get some picks.
All right, well, then let's see. I think we're going to go with Jim Parker, another Ohio State player.
Thank goodness. You guys are going to steal all of mine.
We're going to stick with the Big Ten. Huge guy, 248 pounds, largest to play for Ohio State at the time. He was quick, explosive, and driven. I'm reading off of the College Football Hall of Fame website here. So, helped lead the Buckeyes to a perfect 10-game season in 1954, Big Ten Conference title and national championship. Was an All-American and All-Conference player the following year, and then won the Outland Trophy in his senior season. Was also a unanimous All-American and placed eighth in the Heisman voting that season.
All right. Since I still actually somehow have a couple people on my list, I'm going to take Bryant McKinney out of Miami with my next pick. He was an All-American in 2000 and 2001 after redshirting in 99 and transferring from Lackawanna College in good old Scranton, Pennsylvania.
As a tight end.
Yeah, nonetheless. Was the winner of the 2001 Outland Trophy, also finished eighth in the Heisman voting, and was a key player on that 01 national championship team for Miami, where he was actually named the player of the year. And he was roommates with Jeremy Shockey, just a fun fact. But he was inducted in Miami Sports Hall of Fame in 2012. Absolute part of that team that helped Miami be as dominant as they were, especially when you have a guy at left tackle that can just stop any edge rusher when you have guys like Dwight Freeney in your conference. My fourth pick, I'm going to go a little old school here. I'm going to take Chuck Benarek out of Penn here. Three-time All-American, where he played both center and linebacker and the occasional punter. Had an award also named after him, finished third in the Heisman voting and won the Maxwell Award Trophy, and has been labeled by a panel of sports writers, coaches, and Hall of Fame players as the greatest center of all time. So, Gibble, I stole your Ivy League player.
Darn. I honestly have no Ivy League players on my my board here.
You're killing the brand.
I know, right? I don't know. I should probably have had one just for the heck of it. All right. So that's your two picks. I am going to take a center with my next one. I'm going to go with Greg Ezlinger, Minnesota center. Three-time first-team All-American, three-time All-Big Ten, won the Outland Trophy, Remington Trophy, and was Offensive Lineman of the Year in 2005, as well as winning the Jim Parker Trophy that season. So, yeah.
Not the greatest center of all time, though.
Not the greatest center of all time?
Still no. Very good, though.
Chuck Benarek is the greatest center of all time, according to people.
Interesting.
Well, it depends on who you ask, really.
Depends on the people.
All right. We talked about it before the podcast. I originally wasn't set to pick guys in specific positions, but it's actually going to work out that way. So I'll have a very functioning offensive line here. We're going to go down to number 7 here on my big board to round out these next two picks. Steve Hutchinson, guard from Michigan, four-time All-Big Ten, two-time All-American. Was a guard on the Michigan team that won a national championship in 1997. I think he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or at least he's close. He will get in eventually. So Steve Hutchinson there as my guard. Now I need a center. And with Ezlinger off the board, the only other one I have on my list here, I'm going to take Barrett Jones, the center from Alabama. 2011 Outland Trophy playing guard. 2012, he then moved to center and won the Remington Award. He was a two-time All-American, won three national championships with Alabama earlier this past decade. Also, those three national championships, he won playing three different spots on the offensive line. So not only a center, but can rotate around to the guard positions as well. So Orlando Pace, Jonathan Ogden, John Hanna, Steve Hutchinson, and Barrett Jones rounds out my offensive line team.
Well, much like yours, I only need one more tackle to make a full offensive line, and the only one that I have left is Jake Long, Michigan tackle.
I'd like to point out that I don't have many people left on this board.
Oh, yeah, same. I have very few. But Jake Long was a first-team All-Pro and second-team All-Pro in the NFL. That doesn't matter. He was a two-time consensus All-American, two-time first-team All-Big Ten, two-time Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year, and a Big Ten champion in 2004. So, yeah, that's who we're going with.
All right, since you guys stole all the good Ohio State players, I'm still going to take an Ohio State player here because I just feel like I need to do one. So I'm going to take LeCharles Bentley, 2001 consensus All-Big Ten and All-American, Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, also named to the Remington Award winner, started all 11 games his junior and senior year and started 9 his sophomore year. Actually was able to play tackle and guard his sophomore year before fully switching to center, so very versatile on the offensive line. And was also first-team All-American by the Walter Camp Football Writers Association and AP. So an absolute stud his senior year for Ohio State. Unfortunately, he missed the year when they win the national championship against good old Miami Hurricanes. So Dave Remington, Joe Thomas, Chuck Benarek, Bryant McKinney, and LeCharles Bentley round out my team.
Not bad. I think I finished with, I didn't do a full 15. I did 13 players this week because this one was a bit hard, but there were three that were still on my big board that didn't get selected.
There's only three on mine too.
Tony Baselli, from offensive tackle from USC, Randall McDaniel, guard from Arizona State, and Willie Rofe, offensive tackle from Louisiana Tech, were the three that didn't get picked, but were still on my board.
I had to Brickashaw Ferguson, Nick Mangold, and Bill Frelick.
I had Aaron Taylor, Wisconsin guard, Dean Steinkuhler, Nebraska guard.
You should have picked him just for his last name.
Buddy, I thought about it. Brad Buddy, USC guard, and Dominic Raiola, Nebraska center. Those are my remaining ones.
Well, how many of these people did you know beforehand?
One.
Orlando Pace.
No, two. Two, yeah. And Joe Thomas, just because he was Cleveland Brown for a million years.
I will admit, I really wanted Bryant McKinney, and I was really hoping somebody would just take Jonathan Ogden before he got to my pick, because that one was, it was tough, but I had Ogden number two on my board, and I had McKinney six, so I was like, go with the higher one. Shame. No Miami players, but whatever. All right.
Intern Gibble.
Well, they better be able to play guard.
I think they can. I guess we'll find out.
All right. Intern Gibble will have that graphic up sometime in the next month for voting purposes. We hope. And things will hopefully be spelled correctly and fact checked. So let's hope.
Yeah, I'll send them to you guys before so we can fact check them.
Please. All right. Jake, do we have any listener questions?
Well, we've got three from my ire, so we can start with them. I was checking to make sure none came in at the last minute, but we have three from Myers. So I believe the first one he asked is, who has a better array of condiments, Arby's or Chick-fil-A? So we'll start with that one.
Whew.
Chick-fil-A. The Chick-fil-A sauce just wins.
Nobody rides harder for Chick-fil-A than I do. I would go Chick-fil-A because Arby's sauce is great. It was Arby's and Chick-fil-A, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Arby's sauce is great, if you go to the right Arby's, I don't know if all of them have it, but the, like three pepper ketchup or whatever they have is really good. I also haven't been doing Arby's in quite a while. Those are good. Chick-fil-A is just, Chick-fil-A's Polynesian sauce is the greatest condiment on earth. So I will 100% go there. Chick-fil-A sauce is good as well. I think it's a tad overhyped. But I think their array of sauces is much better, especially if you get a sandwich and you get the packet of the honey roasted. I think it's honey roasted barbecue sauce. That stuff's phenomenal as well. So yeah, rolling with Chick-fil-A here.
Yeah, I can't tell you the last time I've actually been to an Arby's. I don't know where there is one near me. So Chick-fil-A wins by default. So his second question is, with a very strong recruiting class this year, Tennessee is generating some buzz. What do you project as the Vols' peak in the next 5 years? Aaron, I'll let you go first on that one.
Oh, I mean, if these things work out and Jeremy Pruitt ends up, it is a good coach, Tennessee's in a spot. They play in a raucous environment. They're Rocky Top. They can be the SEC champion down the line. I'm 5 years out. It's hard to project, but it's a school that has won national championships, that has been prominent. So the history's there. After last season, getting off on an awful foot, losing to Georgia State and then turning it around to who did they beat in their bowl game again? Jake.
8 Windiana.
Yeah, that's who it was. Just wanted to hear you say it.
8 Windiana.
But
what if we make 11 Windiana and turn the I's into ones?
Stop. That'll never happen. Just stop. Their peak, they could compete for the SEC championship. I mean, I don't think Alabama's going anywhere, but they can certainly compete. And in the SEC East, they can put up a fight against Florida and Georgia.
In turn, what thoughts do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I think they have the potential. They're bringing in some solid recruits right now. Things look like they're heading in the right direction. They're on the easier side of the SEC. Really only having to, primarily having to compete with Georgia and Florida. If Georgia continues to have a boring ass offense, then that gives Tennessee the room to kind of take it over. I don't know about them winning the SEC championship. I mean, they could kind of fluke into it when they have to probably inevitably play Alabama.
Well, they have to play Alabama every year anyways.
Well,
that's the thing that I was going to get to is you have to play Alabama every year until you can actually show you can beat Alabama. It's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that a 10-win season is out of the question for them. I mean, they finished 8-5 last year. So 10 wins is, I feel like, a pretty reasonable expectation for them. To get beyond that, hopefully they can get over that hill for them. And if I have to end up rooting for them, then I'll definitely hope that they get over that hump. They're going to go undefeated when I'm a fan. Just kidding. They're not. They're going to go
completely. I'm rooting so hard against Tennessee now.
But yeah, I mean, I think they have the chance being on the easier side of the SEC, but I don't. They just need to prove it on the field.
I think they need Florida or Georgia to lose some momentum, because if Florida or Georgia continue to be a top notch team, it's going to be very tough for them to compete, because if they lose those games on the field, it's going to be still hard for them to get recruits. Right now, they're selling a lot of hope in year two of Jeremy Pruitt. So if this gets to year four, year five, and they still haven't really beaten any of them, or they only beat them once, it's going to be hard to continue to sell that hope, sell that dream. I think a win over Alabama would change a lot if they can manage to do it once in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, and the way you change that and the way you disrupt the momentum is then to beat either of those schools. Because when it comes down to it with Georgia and Florida, it's not that they aren't good teams, but when I look at it with Kirby Smart and Dan Mullen is, yeah, they consistently are finishing in the top 10, but really what have they done? Neither has won a national championship. I know Georgia got there a few years back, but there's nothing like looking at Clemson or Alabama or Ohio State or something like that, where it's like, here's this top team that's winning national championships and is consistently there that can't be knocked off. And I think that inspires a little bit more hope for Tennessee going forward, that these are teams that, you know, lose a game every year that seems to knock them out. Be that team, build your own momentum, slow the momentum of another team. And that's how you ultimately get to the top. So I think that's the way Tennessee is going to have to do it. Obviously, you want to beat Alabama, with them being on the other side of the conference. I don't find that to be something that is a desperate need right away. And I think you kind of work your way to getting there. But I think any Tennessee fan will probably tell you just winning the SEC East right now would be a huge step in the right direction. So I think that's how you do it if you're the Vols.
I think it's absolutely obtainable in a 5-year plan, because they got a couple 5-stars. Now, granted, most of the recruits are 3-stars, but if you can build them into contenders and use that leverage of those 5-star talents to win a couple of these games, you get the right schedule, you get the right teams at home 1 year. Sometimes you just better be lucky than good, and then that can help pole vault you into something else.
I will say this year, that's probably not it. They also have Oklahoma on the road.
Yeah, so it's not this year. They have Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Oklahoma this year. Good luck, Tennessee.
Right.
All right, Gibble, this last one, I think it might have kind of pertains more to you. Myers wants to know why his neighbor was mowing the lawn at 8:15 in the morning on a Sunday, and I volunteered you to investigate.
Yeah, you gave me about a half hour to investigate that, so I did not leave my house because I was doing research. So I honestly
would you have left your house if I gave you a week?
Well, in some facet, I would have left my house.
Would you have?
We'll see. Yeah, I couldn't tell you why. I mean, as you get older, you think you need to do everything in the wee hours of the morning on a Sunday. If you go to church, then you got to get it done before church. Then you shower and go to church. But even though church is all online right now, so maybe that's why he decided 8:15 was the right time of day to do it. Do it before it gets hot out. I think today it's supposed to rain, so also get it in before the rain. There's a lot of factors.
very hard hitting analysis from intern Gibble there.
I know. A lot of speculation.
All right. Anything else?
Those are our questions for this week.
All right. All right, folks. Thanks for joining us again. We'll be back in 2 more weeks with another draft, which let me double check what we're doing. We'll be linebackers. In 2 weeks, we'll be doing linebackers, so we'll get to something a bit more fun than offensive linemen at the end of the day. And remember to go to Smack Apparel. Buy some t-shirts, some merch with some of that stimulus money for your favorite teams, whether that's a Kansas Jayhawks shirt for whatever reason, if you're a big dumb idiot. But whatever you want to do, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Have a good one.